99 episodes later, here we are. It is the Tala SM Podcast, episode number 100. If you didn't think we'd get this far, you're not alone. I didn't think so either. We are into our fourth season. We've racked up that magical three figures, and we're going to do our best to try and make the next hour or so magical for you. And to do so, we've got a number of guests on the show. We are here live. Well, you're not listening to this live, unfortunately, but we're live at the Menaisky Stadium in one of the executive boxes very kindly provided for us by the club. So thank you there. That's the one lone shill I'm going to give them. I'm going to get back to bashing them shortly. So they've kindly given us a box for the night to celebrate our 100th show. And we are here at the Star Fans Forum, where we'll be hearing from new manager Yap Stam as well. Sadly, no details of that on this show. It is a closed shop. So if you're not here at the Mad Stud, you won't get to find out what Yap's had to say. So sorry about that. But we'll do our best to entertain you in the meantime. As I said, it's episode number 100. And to mark that, I'm joined by a motley crew of no fewer than seven co-hosts today. It's almost like a Christmas special, except we're not in Tireless at the Spread Eagle for a change. Joining me from around the table, going anti-clockwise, I'm joined by young Ollie Allen, making his Tireless End Podcast debut. Ollie, hello.
Hello. Not a bad time to make my debut, I don't think, on episode number 100. So
you've done well. You're the youth movement. So, you know, we might need you. We're going to hope for you on episode 1000.
Hopefully, yeah.
Get you training. Wimb Senior is here.
I'm back again. I'm responsible for the Tireless End, I must say.
Yeah, there you go. Wait.
End of show. Yeah.
Thanks, Dad. Thanks for embarrassing me on a podcast. Mark Mayo.
Yep, I'm hoping today's podcast won't be a memory of my last podcast appearance, which was when me and Steve Curtis sat down with you, Wim, for a good 2 hours of recording that didn't get saved. So we were there till about 11 p.m. in the end. So hopefully it won't be a routine of that.
And yeah. We're gonna crack on. If you've learned anything from the previous 99 episodes, you know this is an unprofessional joke of a recording situation. So things like that are to be expected. The man who was on episode one is here. The lone survivor other than myself, Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
An unprofessional joke all the way.
Yeah, you've manned up all the way through. No Westy, unfortunately. He's down in Cornwall. So, good excuse to miss this show. Becca's with us. Becca, hello.
Hiya. Slightly more glamorous than when we were in Salford for the FBAs in November.
Yeah, when we did Steve Clark. We thought he was gone. We thought he'd gone to Fulham. So we quickly scrambled to do a podcast together in the hotel in Salford. And then he hung around after all. So there you go. Jacob South Klein is with us. Jacob, hello.
I've made it out of the bush alive.
You
and
have.
I'm in the studio. Hello.
And we will be getting plenty of Jacob's thoughts on his Bushwats exploits a little later on, so stay tuned for that. And of course, the enforcer of the group, our incredible Hulk, Dave Harris. Hambags, hello.
Good evening.
Saving the best for last.
Absolutely. Wouldn't expect any different.
Who's yet to arrive then?
Come on, be fair.
Can we get a sound effect on that? Like, wah, wah.
Tumbleweed.
What, do you expect we have some sort of professional production?
Post-production unit, yeah.
Exactly, it's bad enough I have to like put the parts of the show together and use those little stings, you know. 100 episodes in and we're still using the same stings, so that should tell you everything you need to know. But in all seriousness, before we get into the show, thank you very much for everyone who has listened throughout the show's history so far. You know, I joke that I didn't think we'd get to 100 episodes, but it has literally been because of the support of the listeners out there, the fact you keep hitting that download button, whether you listen or not, I don't know, but you're downloading in numbers. So thank you very much for that. And for everyone who's sending the emails and tweets, you keep them coming week in, week out. So thank you very much for that. We've done our best to entertain you. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't think we're going anywhere, unless this is all part of some elaborate plot by the football club to bump us off. So if you hear screams and the sound of ejector seats, that is what that is. But in the meantime, we do have plenty of football to discuss. It has been a good week for Reading Football Club on the pitch, starting with a cup progression, moving into a league win, and then kind of another cup win, but we'll cover that in just a second in the recap.
View from the Tarhurst End. Recapping this week's Championship action.
Right, recap time. Now, if I remember correctly, I think episode one was at the start of the 2013-14 season. I think we started that with a 1-0 win over Ipswich. Seem to remember. Dave, I'm going to ask you here because you're the statistician.
His eyes lit up.
Of the group, was that correct?
No, we won 2-1.
Was it? Oh, was that the game that J-Tab scored?
Yes.
Yeah, those opening day games over Ipswich all blend into one. So we had a narrow win to talk about that day, and we've got a narrow win to talk about today because Reading went away to Cardiff and picked up a win. The first away win under Yap Stam. We'll come on to the game that preceded it with the MK Dons first, though, get that out of the way, because there's not an awful lot to talk about with that, Johnny. It was 2-2. Reading went through on penalties. A much-changed team. You weren't at the game, but you got to see the team sheets and stuff like that. So from afar, were you surprised that Yapstam had deviated from that first round effort where he named a full-strength side?
Not particularly, because I think the squad was... there were a lot more players in the squad, and you've got a lot of mouths to feed there now, especially with the additions we've seen over the last couple of weeks. And you've seen he's brought in a number of young players who I think are going to be able to play in the EFL Trophy or Cup or League or Czech Trophy, whatever it's called, and the Youth Trophy, the European one as well. So he's got a lot of players, a lot of mouths to feed, and a lot of game time to give these players. So I wasn't too surprised to see him change the side too much, no.
Wim Senior, Dad, you were sat next to me in the middle, so I know you were there. Do you think it was too many changes, though? Because there wasn't quite that rhythm we'd seen from Sam's sides at the Madstad. They sort of traditionally made sort of good, fast starts, pressing hard. They didn't really seem to get into this game until a bit later on.
You could argue that there were too many changes and the rhythm was disrupted. But looking at the team, you have to give this squad games. And we saw in the last round how he never brought on substitutes. It was very, very strange that we were well in front against Plymouth, but he was reluctant to change it. So I was pleased that he made changes, and it was good to see some of the other players coming in.
Dave, you were there as well. It wasn't much change, side, but was there anyone that sort of stood out for you? Callum Harriott, getting the two goals is the headline catcher, but anybody else, or Harriott included, if you want to talk about him, that really sort of stood out that night?
Yeah, Liam Kelly. It was absolutely everywhere. Read the game so, so well. You see the amount of interceptions that he made where he could read the pass before the pass had been made. And it's just unfortunate the way that he ended up going off the pitch, thanks to Jake Cooper's nonce. Liam Kelly was absolutely phenomenal for me on the night.
Jake Cooper mentioned there, unfortunately, by Dave.
Oh, man.
He didn't have the best of nights, did he? Sort of giving away the ball that led to the penalty and then knocking out one of his own players.
Yeah, it's a funny one, Cooper, because I certainly don't think we should crucify him, because let's not forget he's still he's a young man. He's, what, 21, 22? Am I right in saying that? Yeah, and he's been treated arguably unfairly by Stam in the manner, like the sort of heavy-handed manner of which he's been uprooting out the team, and that we've signed another centre-back as a direct replacement for him. But on the basis of MK Dons, I don't think it's unwarranted, because I'm still trying to work out the actual logistics of Cooper being able to like headbutt Kelly in the air. but I could scarcely believe it in my own eyes when I saw it. But you know, to be responsible for the first goal with a dodgy back pass, and then to injure probably our best player on the pitch at the time, and then to leave us with 10 men at the end when he went down with cramp, it was a bit of a night to forget for Cooper, yeah.
Mark, there was a little bit of frustration from the Reading fans in the stadium. It wasn't a massive crowd in by any means, but there were a few times when you could hear a few boos, a few sort of exasperated tones from when the ball wasn't going forward. Can you understand that frustration, or are you someone that's very much, you know, give them a break?
It depends as to where we're going as a team. If we're going to be sitting here and thinking about players that are going to knock it around in defence and not really try and score goals, and if we were, for example, 1-0 up, and we've seen Adkins teams in the past have sat on a lead, basically, and tried to see a game out which hasn't really worked, then that can be a bit frustrating. But I think in a young team that's trying to go and win a game against a lesser team, anything that's not working is frustrating. If we'd have knocked the ball long and we'd still have drawn 2-2, that still would have been frustrating. So the fact that they chose to boo, I think, was more a reflection of the scoreline and the state of the game rather than any individual tactical analysis.
Yeah, I'm going to hold my hand up here. I did boo, but I booed because of the fact I had to stay here. Not of the performance, because I was sat there and I had work the next morning and I looked at my watch, because unfortunately the injury to Kelly added on a lot of injury time. And I think it's the latest I've ever left the Menacy Stadium in terms of, I think after the Forest game, the celebrations, people left late. But I think I looked at my watch, it was 10 to 11 by the time I got out of the Madstad. I can't think of a game. Can anyone think of a game we've been later?
Well, Dan, am I right in saying that the last time we went to penalties was against Northampton 6 years ago?
Dave?
I was asked this question afterwards, and I can't think of another time, so I think it was, yes.
Yeah, and
I think it was Simod Cup.
Simod Cup was the latest one.
Coventry.
In 88.
Yeah.
That would have been a 7:45 kickoff, and I think it was 10:38 was the Michael Gilkes penalty.
And this was 10:50. I think.
Was it 10:50?
I think I timed it at 10:50.
It was late. It was very late that I left, certainly.
Yeah.
Late enough to see the players coming out the back door. That was we were sort of swayed of very relieved looking Reading players on our way out. Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand why the club continue with 8 p.m. kickoffs, but for games like that when there's only 6,000-7,000 in the ground, I don't know. Becca, just very quickly, one of the ideas that was suggested afterwards is, do you want to see extra time? I mean, they've got to obviously decide a winner on the night, but do you think they should have extra time? Or do you think they should just go straight to pens?
I was actually talking about this at work the other day. I personally think, like, scrap extra, especially for maybe FA Cup, when you're doing your, obviously they have the replay and then it goes to extra time or whatever, but I think maybe for the League Cup, I think it's probably suitable just to go to penalties. Like, it's just not as important, is it?
Neither manager wanted it. The team that Carl Robinson put out and the team that Yapstown put out were very much young teams, and it could have really ended badly for him, because Liam Kelly was making his full debut and asked to play 120 minutes when he hasn't really had any sort of competitive football, and that's dangerous. And for the early rounds, especially when players are not in the groove and things like that, it's something that I don't know. I don't know whether it should even be, Dave, something that maybe the managers should have the chance.
It's a difficult one. You can see why they have extra time, because it's a team game and you have to allow the team the opportunity to actually go and win the game. But having said that, you saw some of the players that we had on the pitch, you know, at 90 minutes, and Tenai Watson could barely run. Jake Cooper had an ankle injury.
Had to play up front for the last
thing. you know, and both sides, particularly Reading, were absolutely dead on their feet. And it's, you know, it was a wonder that we even went on to get a draw out of the game. All right, MK Dons didn't really create any chances. It's a tough one. As I say, it's a team game. And you've got to allow the team the opportunity to win the game. Whether or not you shorten extra time...
Bring back golden goal.
Golden goal is definitely right.
Not entirely sure about golden goal, but silver goal at least. I'm much more of a fan of the silver goal, because then if you score a goal in the first half of extra time, it still gives the opportunity for the team that's conceded the chance to make up for that, atone for that, conceding that goal, as it were. When a golden goal is very final, that's it, bang, and end off. I think there was only one team that ever won on a silver goal, and it was Greece, and they scored it in the 114th minute.
Yeah, remember golden
goal. And
they won
it in 2004, won the European Championships.
Yeah, I remember Bierhoff scoring a golden goal.
Euro 96
as well. Yeah.
Trezeguet scored one silver goal or golden goal for France at Euro 2000.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Our reward for those 100 for that 10-11 finish was a trip to Brighton in round 3.
Don't have enough of those, do we?
No.
Ran the knockers out the other year, didn't they? Yeah.
They did.
That was in the League Cup.
In the FA Cup, even.
Was it the FA Cup?
Yeah, they knocked out in the FA Cup.
Third round.
Even worse.
How do people feel about that draw? Is it one that... Because a lot of people say, well, it's a winnable game. Anyone
excited? It's going to be overly enamoured with it, are they? I mean, for me, I was put in the article that I wrote just before the game, familiarity breeds contempt. You know, we, there's only four teams that we've played more in the league in the whole of the 92. So to draw them in a cup competition, it's just like, for God's sake.
It's a bit like the Derby game a few years ago, where it's a winnable game against a side in our division, but we got beaten. And it could well be the same this time around. I mean, it is a winnable game, but Brighton are one of the best sides in this division. So
yeah, we've got a bit of a hiccup as well. We can't seem to get past the fourth round of the League Cup ever since that 98 quarter final against Middlesbrough that seems to come up on this podcast far too often, because I'm so angered by the referee and Craig Hignett that I won't let it go.
George Kane of Bootle.
The butcher of Bootle. Anyway... If you go back and listen to any of the previous 100 shows, I'm sure it won't take you long to find me bringing up that game. So let's move on.
If you haven't seen it, just look it up on YouTube. It is on YouTube.
Indeed.
I have seen it.
Reading 0, Middlesbrough 1. Right. And speaking of 0-1, that is how Reading won at Cardiff, as mentioned. Yapstam's first away win. Ollie, you were there to see it. Was this a 3 points that Reading deserved?
I'd probably say Cardiff edged the first half, Reading edged the second half. It was a pretty dull game, I'm not going to lie. There were a few chances for either side. In my opinion, I think Reading probably just about deserved to get the 3 points. Jan Kermigan's goal, arguably Jordan Abiyat's cross could have been and should have been cleared by Cardiff. But yeah, I'd say Reading probably just about nicked it. Cardiff were poor. Reading were only a little bit better.
Becky, you see Reading away from home. You've already been, you know, you've read our first two match reports away from home for the start of the season. But what sort of difference is it between Reading going away? Because at home they have been very strong, but away they've not been able to sort of keep themselves in games too often.
I mean, I went to Wolves and then Newcastle 4 days later. And I mean, the game at Wolves was just, they sit so far back. Like, I mean, obviously they're passing from the back, but when you're passing across your penalty box and they can't, it's almost like they were tuned into, I can't see anything else but pass between Al Habsi and the back four. I think Newcastle was slightly better in that, I don't know, maybe it was the occasion of being up there. Maybe, I mean, against Wolves they weren't great, but obviously Newcastle, you're playing a stronger team, and I think Newcastle, they created a lot more going forward. But it's frustrating to watch in that you can see what they're trying to do, but it's almost like maybe like they don't feel like they've got the confidence like they do at home.
And Reading, I think that builds into a point that I made a couple of podcasts ago, in that, and I think it was a specific point about is either Chris Gunter or Jordan Obita, when they get the ball, all too often they'll just sort of take a look forward up the line, they'll either loft it up the line or they'll pass it back to the centre-back, and they don't have the confidence in their teammate to play a ball into a man who, you know, who has a player, an opposition player, in his vicinity. Now, as I said before, I'd back John Swift to manoeuvre his way out of a position like that very quickly with a simple touch of the ball. Get your body in, you know, in the way of the player, and do that. It's about taking risk, and Ajax do it all the time. We know we're modelling what we're doing very much on a Dutch way of football, Dutch style of football. And I think, given time, we'll see more progressiveness in the passing as we go forward.
Johnny, this was a game that, again, Reading come away with 3 points. Fantastic finish from Jan Kermigan in the last minute of the game. And, you know, it's a game you could say that Reading maybe deserve 3 points, depending on who you talk to. But the stat that, again, stands out to me, to only 2 shots on target, despite all of that possession again. Are you worried about the attacking threat that is at the football club? Or is it just a case of they're just clinical?
I think it is a case of they're clinical, but I think it's also a case of the Amsterdam sides, as we've seen, tend to create good chances when they create chances. It's not about creating a lot of chances, it's about creating good chances. And we've certainly done that in the few games that I've seen. And there's a lot more pressure on goals to come from other sources than just the striker as well. I think we've said how much John Swift was involved in just about every goal we'd scored this season. John Swift wasn't even involved against Cardiff due to an injury. And we managed to get the goal and get the win without him. So it's certainly more of a team game. And like we were saying earlier with the style of play, it is about sort of dragging the team, dragging the opposition here, dragging the opposition there, trying to create that perfect opportunity, essentially. Not necessarily pass it in, but not just have a wayward shot from 25 yards, which, you know, would go down as a shot on or off target, but quite frankly, isn't dangerous to anyone.
Yeah, a couple of changes going into the game as well. Tyler Blackett signed from Manchester United on a permanent deal, which surprised us. It happened mere minutes, Johnny, after we finished the podcast last week.
Brilliantly suggesting he'll probably be on loan, and we think that's probably a decent deal, yeah.
So he ended up signing on a permanent deal, comes into the defence, replaces Jordan Obita at left back. Mark, you know, we've watched Jordan Obita now for 2-3 seasons, not really sort of move steps forward. Did he deserve to be dropped for that game? And what do you do going forward? Because he does come off the bench and he creates the winner. So what does Yapstam do for the next game? Is it Blackett's position now, or is it still Jordan's shirt?
I think the fact that it was a clean sheet last week and a winning team means that you can stick with Blackett, because if you're going to have a new signing, you have to give him a chance. The problem is with left back is that you can only play one, obviously. You can have Obita and you can maybe have a youth team player, or like we had last year, someone like Andrew Taylor, who's not as good, quite frankly, or you can create a bit of competition. What I think we've smartly done with Blackett is that we've got two permanent signings who are both young, can both play off each other. They're both slightly different footballers. Certainly Obita used to be a winger, so there's something that they can learn off of each other and bring each other forward. And I think that it shouldn't be a problem to play Blackett next week, and if we concede 3 goals, it shouldn't be a problem or anything that we fear to bring Obita back in.
Yeah. I'll open this up to the whole group then. I just found this interesting. The Who Scored website, it's one that I have a love-hate relationship with, it because it's fantastic for stats, and a lot of their sort of analysis is based purely on stats rather than watching the games. But they give ratings based on performances, shots, passes, completion, all that sort of jazz. And their top five players running this season are Liam Moore, who's well ahead at the top, but by virtue of only playing one league game. He's got a 7.93 average rating. Then it's John Swift on 7.14, Gareth McCleary 7.09, Joe Vandenberg 6.96, and Paul McShane 6.93. Swift, McCleary, Vandenberg and McShane, Dad, would you say they have been Reading's four best players this season? Or does any of those names surprise you?
I don't think there's been anyone apart from Swift that has really stood out in any game. I think that those players have been more consistent. But I think that if you look at the whole squad and the way that they're playing, no one has said to me, this is me, that I'm making a difference on my own.
Mm. Anybody else? Any of those names surprised? Jacob?
I'm going to put my flag in the sand here and now and say that I absolutely adore Joey Vandenberg. I think he's the best thing since sliced bread.
Because it's not just patriotism.
No, not at all. I'm not. My orange tinted glasses have got nothing to do with that at all. I just think he's been brilliant since coming in. That he's totally mental. I think he will get he will get sent off again, if not once or twice.
He's getting towards on. Give him time, but I think he'll end up getting towards Andre Bique style level of.
I think Terry Herlock comes to mind every time. Yeah.
But I mean, for me, it's an entertainment business. He's certainly entertaining, but more importantly, and you know, to the point of the way that Yapstam set us up now, I think he is born for that midfield enforcer role. I think he's added a real sort of steel and a bit more backbone to us, which is what we've been missing for the last couple of seasons. And I'd love to see what he does over the space of a whole season.
I think that Joey in that midfield gives us that destroyer that we never had before.
Mm.
And we've been lacking that destroyer for so many seasons since the Sidwell and Parky days. And whilst I didn't see the Cardiff game, I believe that his position is right there in the middle.
And that's what I was going to ask. I was going to sort of go around the table. Is this it? I mean, do you want to see him back in that defence at all? Or is this it for him now? Is he the midfield or bust?
He was born. He was brought as a midfielder.
Born as a midfielder.
came out of his mother's womb and his mother looked at him and said, Joey, you will be a midfielder.
They tagged the number six on
his. A mixture of phrases there. I was going to say he was born to be a midfielder. He is the Dutch destroyer, isn't he? Let's face it. My personal highlight though of those four names this season is Gareth McCleary giving the Brighton left back up. Is it Bong? His name is.
He's called Gaetan Bong.
Gave him a torrid time. Just every bit as torrid I felt as Anthony Knockhart gave Jordan Obita in the second half. But Gareth McCleary has been so much more effective so far this season. I'm really quite impressed.
It's been lovely to see him fit because the last couple of pre-seasons has had a few injury niggles, be it through coming back from the Gold Cup with Jamaica with an injury or not having like an entire pre-season to get prepared. But like he's really sort of reminded us what he can do on his day.
It's
this
so
season.
Frustrating seeing him on a football pitch and it almost looks half-hearted. We know it's not because he's a 100% player, but the last couple of seasons, it's been so frustrating watching him, knowing that there's so much more in that tank. I'm just about starting to see it.
He looks confident again.
Yeah.
Mm. It looks like he's enjoying his football as well. Yeah. And just before we come on to news bites and talking about deadline day and Asamoah Gyan, looking at the bottom five of the Who Scored rankings as well, you've got Dennis Rackles at the bottom, who, bless him, is going to be out until pretty much the new year. Picked up a nasty injury against the MK Dons and we wish him a speedy recovery. So he's got a 6.07 rating, although that's based off that lone start of the first game of the season and one brief sub appearance. Next name surprised me though, George Evans, 6.23. Then you've got Tyler Blackett, who's again only played one game. And Chris Gunter, 6.49. And Danny Williams as well, 6.5. I didn't expect to see Evans and Williams in there. The silence suggests nothing.
I think the thing is, that's quite a strange rating because you remember last season we talked about quite a lot how Norwood was flying on the Who Scored ratings and Evans largely has the same role when he does play. So maybe it's a sign that Norwood is so much better than we think or that Who Scored ratings are pretty as bad as we think. The thing is with Evans is you never really notice him on the pitch. And in a way, that can be quite good for a midfielder. He does his bits and pieces, he moves on, does the basics. But also, he hasn't popped up with a goal or an assist, as far as I'm aware, yet.
Nothing spectacular about his play so far, which is probably why he is where he is in those ratings.
So what's the midfield trio for you, Johnny? With John Swift presumably, hopefully, back fit. I know he's had to pull out of the England under 21 squad due to an injury that kept him out of the Cardiff game. But if he is fit, who is that trio for you?
I'd probably say Swift, Williams, and
Vandenberg.
I guess Vandenberg, although I still don't trust him. As much as he's entertaining, I do think he's a bit of a liability.
But we loved Andre Bique. He was like that.
This is true.
Phil Parkinson got himself sent off plenty of times. Andy Bernal got himself sent off 7 times in a Reading shirt.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he's certainly better in midfield than he is in defence.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it gives the defence protection, but also gives him protection. Because when he was last man, like we saw, who was it in pre-season? Against Bournemouth. He made a tackle against Bournemouth and missed it, and I think the Bournemouth player ran through and scored. But by playing him slightly further up the field, it means that someone's got a chance to mop up if he does do something like that. So I think it's a win-win situation having him in that midfield.
Having said that, the tackle in front of the South Stand in the second half against Brighton absolutely nailed it. Brilliant, brilliant challenge.
He was on a yellow as well.
He was, yeah. Get it wrong, penalty and a yellow, and he's off.
Yeah,
and
he did get sent off anyway.
Saved it for later.
Indeed, right.
Inevitable.
So all of that leaves Reading 15th in the early season table. We've got 7 points from our 5 games. We're above Villa and Derby, those big spenders. So it's not a bad start to the season at all. And one hopefully that will only go up, because 2 games unbeaten, and if you include the cup, that's 3 or 4. I'm going to very briefly mention it. Reading win 3-2 at Bristol Rovers. It's in the Checkatrade Trophy, the competition formerly known as the Auto Windscreen Shield and Johnston's Paint, the Football League Trophy.
The artist formerly known as the Football League Trophy. Yeah.
It's basically an under-23 competition, but Reading, it's a group stage as well. Reading got Bristol Rovers, Portsmouth and Yeovil in their group. Does anybody want to talk about this?
Because Bristol Rovers are a side high on confidence after last season. They got promoted and they've won a couple of games this season against impressive opposition, and they played virtually full strength side, I think.
Yeah.
And our kids beat them.
I think it's very useful. I think it's a great way to use your squad and a great way to get those lads playing together as well on a higher platform. I think it's a very good platform.
Although saying that, 3 of them, Jack Stacey, Tarek Foster, Dom Hyam, have now all gone out on loan.
Yeah.
So could that have been because of that game, though?
Yeah, put them in the shop window because Stacey got the opener, didn't they?
Yeah.
This is what I was saying about especially the purchases this season. A lot of them are in that sort of 21, 22, 23 bracket. So you know that you can put them in this situation, in these competitions. Okay, it may not be why they signed, but it certainly gives them first team football. And it isn't quite, I guess, saying go down to the reserves.
The only reason I pause for it is not... It's good to cover it, but it's not senior competition. It doesn't feel... I mean, we're here on the Southside Podcast. We don't really cover the under-21s unless they do something spectacular.
See, this is interesting because someone said to me at work the other day, if Reading under-23s got to Wembley, would you go? And how many people here would? Would you go?
I'd probably go for the day out.
Yeah.
But I would, if we lost the final, I wouldn't be like, oh no.
It would feel a bit embarrassing though. If you go and you play, say, Yeovil, and you lose to Yeovil, and Yeovil supporters are supporting their main team and we're supporting what is essentially our reserve team, would you want to be that? You'd be essentially a scapegoat for a lot of people aren't happy with this competition. You'd be the face of that. And that negative PR in front of a Wembley crowd of what would realistically be 15,000 max.
But if we won...
If you win, then you get a small trophy.
Got a second trophy in the cabinet.
And for a, for a competition which we very almost didn't compete in, because let's not forget that 12 Category 1 academies had to turn down the invitation for us to be playing in it. I think now...
And they wouldn't have done it if they knew that they would have had those teams put
up. Well, indeed. So it's an interesting situation for us to be in. I can certainly understand understand why Stam would... think it's a valuable opportunity for the youngsters, but I can equally fully understand why it grates with some some clubs lower down the ladder, and indeed around us as well.
So. Yeah. Well, all the politics and stuff aside, it said it was good to see Reading side win. It doesn't matter whatever level they're playing in, under-10s, under-23s or senior side, they're all Reading, and a good win. And we will be playing Yeovil at the Banesky Stadium at some point in this trophy as well, so that's one to keep an eye out for, as well as a trip to Portsmouth that Portsmouth supporters at the moment are threatening to boycott. So we'll keep an eye on that as we go through the next few weeks. But in the meantime, it was deadline day, and we've got that to talk about in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
News Bites time, and deadline day has been and gone, and it's gone rather quietly, albeit for with one notable Bushwatch exception, which we'll come on to in just a few minutes' time. But as far from a Reading point of view, none in, and just a few out on loan. As Ollie mentioned earlier, we saw Dom Higham, Jack Stacey and Tariq Fosu all depart on loan. But in terms of ins, there was nobody. Now, part of that was due to the fact that for the early part of the week, we were heavily linked, well, more than heavily linked. He was here at the Medeski Stadium. Asamoah Gyan, former Sunderland striker and Ghana captain, strongly linked to a move here. It was seemingly all but done. He had a medical and he failed it. So they cancelled the move and he has now moved to Dubai, going back to football in the UAE, where he had been before a high money move to China, where he'd been reportedly playing football for about, was it £217,000 a week?
I think it was more than that.
227.
Just a 10k more.
Just a 10k more, you know.
A week.
Probably the entire wage bill of the club at the moment, or half a week's wages for Royston. But everyone, this was a move that really came out of the blue. And Mark, I'm going to start with you here, because you wrote an opinion piece for the Tarlhurst End that caused a bit of a meltdown's too strong a word, but it certainly divided some opinions. Just remind people that haven't seen it how you titled it.
Signing Asamoah Gyan would be the definition of insanity.
And you took quite a bit of stick for this. Some of it some of it admittedly justified, some good constructive criticism. Ollie here wrote a good opinion piece countering your argument. But it was quite vociferous against you that night.
Yeah, I know. the thing is that I didn't write this to gain any sort of attention or anything like that. It's literally how I felt about the idea of signing someone who has been in European football, making his way, and gets a good break at Sunderland, gets the chance to sign a big contract and be their star striker, or go off to Spurs or something like that, with the rumours at the time. And he chooses instead to go on loan to Arabia and then stick around in Asia for the following five seasons on these mega wages, as you're saying. And for the club that we're building a youthful, ambitious, hungry squad of players who are up and coming, to drop in one of the world's most expensive strikers, who certainly has no form to justify that in the major leagues, I think would just be a complete backward step. And I'm not saying that I was justified in that, because I didn't say his fitness, because obviously how would I know his fitness? But the fact that he failed the medical shows just how far off the pace that these players can be when they move so far away.
Ollie, you were on the other side of the fence on this one. Are you disappointed that this deal didn't come off?
Obviously now, knowing in hindsight that he wasn't fit enough, although that seems to have been disputed by him and his representatives today, so that seems a little bit strange.
Yeah, he put out on social media, what, lies.
Yeah, and so in hindsight, not disappointed, but I felt as though he seemed motivated. What he'd said to the press, he said he wanted to prove himself back in England, obviously, and he spent one season with Sunderland. And he seems as though he wanted to be, you know, known to the English fans again and be motivated to do that. And his contract was up at the end of the season, so he wanted to get a new contract. And obviously the Africa Cup of Nations in January, he wanted to get back into the Ghana squad for that. So to me, he seemed motivated, and we needed a striker. And he fitted the bill. He's played the lone striker role most of the clubs he's played for and for Ghana. So for me, it seemed like a good fit. But in hindsight, yeah.
Dave, what did you make of it all?
I won't go so far as to say it was bordering on insanity, but the alarm bells were ringing as soon as I heard it. Simply because you get a player who is earning such an extortionate wage for, ultimately, he is at the top end of the European game, a fairly average striker. He probably could have done it at championship level, but you know, the fact of the matter is, how often does a player turn up at a fair to middling championship club with a huge reputation and actually do it at that club? Very, very rarely. Now, that's no reason on its own in isolation to turn a blind eye to the player. You have, if he's available, then you have to explore the opportunity, and you know, and we quite rightly did. I can imagine it would have been an extremely rigorous medical, though. And the fact that the club turned around and said that it's going to take him 8 weeks to get up to full match fitness spoke volumes, really. The thing is, and it's quite a heavy point, and I've got to labour it quite a lot, is that a player like that, why is he coming to a middle-of-the-road club like Reading in the first place?
Yeah, my biggest question.
So, and for that reason alone, it just didn't feel right at all, you know, whether or not it was close to signing. My first question initially was the wages. How much were we going to pay? You know, even if it was 5% or 10%, that's still £15,000 to £30,000 a week, which is huge.
Sorry, plus the players around him in the dressing room know he's on far more than that in reality.
Yeah, it's the worst kept secret in the world what the guy's on. And then you say you have the effect in the dressing room when you bring a player in like that. And the point was made again by Ollie. It's just so far out there in comparison to every other transfer we've made this season, this pre-season. It just didn't seem right. Well,
the situation is, Johnny, obviously leaves us a bit short on cover. We mentioned Dennis Rackle's injury as well. It leaves you with Jan Kermigan, Dom Samuel, and sort of Joseph Mendes. Yaku Mate is battling fitness concerns as well. Are you concerned that we haven't got enough firepower?
No, because like I said earlier, I think the team is built to score goals from all over the park. You've seen, as we said, how much John Swift has been involved. Gareth McCleary's looked a lot more dangerous. We know that Roy Bierans has scored a couple and certainly created a couple as well. We're seeing the charging runs from midfield. And I actually think that Jan Kermigan, in the last couple of games that I've seen him, has looked better than at any point he has during his Reading career. I thought he had possibly the best game that I've seen him play against Brighton. He was desperately unlucky not to get a goal in that game. He scored the winner against Cardiff from a Jordan Obita cross, another player who's been much maligned by some. And I think if Jan Kermigan can stay fit, yes, he's however old, but we were talking about you're talking about age precedents and Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He's certainly not past his prime, is he? So, you know, I if Jan Kermigan can stay fit and he can manage a 46-game season, then I'm not worried at all. On the Asamoah Gyan point, I was fundamentally against bringing him here because he's a striker who wears the number 3.
Good enough reason for me. Dad, we moved on to deadline day, so Stam, the secret was out that Reading were after a striker by the very fact they went for Gyan. So that left them looking for one on deadline day. They couldn't get one over the line. A few of the names that were mentioned, Lewis Graben, Gabriela Bonlahor, and Connor Washington. I don't think I think all of us around this table would have taken Graben in a heartbeat. I don't think I'm speaking wrong out of turn for anyone.
No.
Gabriela Bonlahor, though.
I was pretty surprised when I heard that. And for his own sake, we can't get in the Villa team. He was virtually booted out last year by them for not being fit. And I thought, well, it's a good chance for him to come and resurrect his career. But I'm surprised we went after him. Are we looking for a Jason Roberts? And I think, is that the key? But is Jan the answer for that? If we play the balls into him? Well, I was quite surprised with some of the names that were coming up. But it didn't happen, and so that's it.
Yep. We've got a question about it in the mailbag, but I'll bring it up now. Someone was saying, you know, was the best bit of business for us, the very fact that Reading kept Danny Williams, Chris Gunter, two players that have been heavily linked with moves out. Was that the best bit of business of all, the fact they stayed at the club, Becca?
I mean, obviously, Stam's coming in and building his own team, but the fact that he's kept two players that have been here for, well, they are some of the more like senior members of the team now, I think that says a lot about what Stam thinks they can bring to the team. I still think that Williams has got quite a lot to give in midfield. I mean, against Newcastle, he had a strong game. And the same with Gunter, he had a good, obviously he had a good Euro season, and we know that he's incredibly fit. There's not, you don't have any issues really with him picking up injuries or, yeah, I think the best bit of business was that we kept hold of them.
So overall then, 11 signings in the transfer window overall. Did we do enough overall? Everyone, I'll go. Just go around the table. Just simple yes or no answer. Are you happy with the transfer window business, Ollie?
No, could have brought in a striker.
Dad?
Same. Overall, I thought we did very well. If we'd brought in a striker, that would have been
better. So is that a yes for a good window or a no for a good window?
Oh, 90% yes.
That's a yes then. Mark?
Yeah, I'll give it a B+ or A-.
Johnny?
I'm going to do as I've done, apparently, for 100 podcasts and sit on the fence.
Okay. Becca?
Yes.
Yeah, Dave?
I'm about to say, that's about the first one-word answer we've had. yes.
And it's a yes from me as well, so you're through to the next round.
Something to quickly add to that. It's mainly based on the fact that we are clearly building and Rome wasn't built in a day. We've done enough to build a to set the foundations in motion for a squad.
Absolutely agreed.
Can't get your expectations up too high, I don't think. No. There's not many players in the squad now that we brought in that you say that he's a superstar, but there aren't any that you maybe perhaps Mendes aside that you think just aren't up to level.
# mid-table one.
And because it is episode 100, and I couldn't let this episode go without mentioning a man who's dominated this podcast for most of those 100 podcasts, Hal Robson-Kanu. Who knew that he was still a player? He's pitched up for West Brom on deadline day. So for all posterity, is he going to be a success at West Brom? And I am going to expect one-word answers from everyone around the table. I'm going to start with Dave. One-word answer, is Hal Robson-Kanu going to be a success at West Brom?
Maybe.
That's not a yes or no.
Maybe.
Oh, come on.
Who knows?
That's
two words. You've got
who knows?
Oh, fine.
Listen. The guy... if we're going to make a comparison here, there's a lot of us... A lot of people who were
using
slating,
more than one word a lot here.
Yes, though. I know. There were a lot of people that were slating Asamoah Gyan for taking the money in China or Saudi Arabia or wherever it was that he went. Hal Robson-Kanu had the opportunity, apparently, to China for £100,000. Chose not to. Got his move to the Premier League. Fair play to the guy in many ways. I think he's underwhelmed here at Reading, but he did perform well in the Premier League before, and he does perform at the international stage.
Okay. Right. So we're going back to the one-word answers. Is Hal Robson-Kanu going to be a success, Becca, at West Brom?
I don't know. I think, like you said, if we've seen how he performed at the Euros when he's in like on the big stage and whatever, then yeah, you know he can do it. But if he does what he does here, then no.
And your gut reaction, is he going to be a success there?
It pains me to say it, but I think yes.
Okay, that's fine. Johnny?
No, because he's gone from being...
Johnny, that was a no. Mark?
No.
No, Dad?
He'll get found out. No.
No, Ollie?
Absolutely not.
I'm going to say yes, because he'll spite me.
that was more than one word.
He listens.
I'm the host. I can do what I like. If he wants to come pick up his double underachiever, I mean, he will forever live on this podcast because the Christmas award for underachiever is named after him. And that's not going to change. I don't care if he goes on and wins the PFA Player of the Year.
Well, he's the epitome of underachiever, isn't he?
Indeed. Indeed. Right, anyway, that is enough mentions of him. We are going to move on now to a series of interviews in Pub Chat, and we're going to start that off with no better place to follow on from our deadline day talk than with Jacob South-Kline talking about Bushwatch.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Right, in just a few minutes' time, you'll be able to hear our interview with a couple of star board members, but we've got another star board member here right now. But he's not just here to talk about star. He's here to talk about superstardom.
I've been working on that one.
I have been working on that all day. That voice you can hear is one Jacob South-Kline, who is famous, even more famous, for Bushwatch. Jacob, I messaged you a few days ago. This isn't one of those I knew him before he was famous thing, but I messaged you a few days ago saying, oh, do you mind just, we're recording in the suite, do you mind just popping on it and talking about Bushwatch? And then I was busy working all day on deadline day. And I get back to the hotel and get a chance to look at my phone. And Bushwatch has exploded. I'm seeing Radio 1 tweet you. I'm seeing everything. I'm seeing Get Reading's done a feature on you. What? For those of you who've missed all this, what happened?
It really was a complete and total, well, very happy accident, because in the 3 years I've done it, yesterday was by far and away the least eventful Bushwatch we've ever had. It was 13 hours of nothing, you know, sort of peeking through foliage, really, and drinking. But I think through the benevolence and kindness of the Reading fans on Twitter, I think I got up to about sixth in the trending charts, or whatever you call them. And I know that Chris Stark was looking for content for their for the Scott Mills show later on in the day.
That's right.
And out of curiosity alone, he clicked on Bushwatch because he thought, God, that sounds a bit lewd. Like, what is that? and he bought into it. Next thing I know, I've got a message from him at 11 asking me to ring up the BBC. And I'm like, oh, God, it's happening. And and then it was sort of a bandwagon job, because then Radio Barks had me on a couple of times. Jack FM, who were just around the corner at the Medeski, got me around for about 5 minutes. Charles Watts and Jonathan Lowe very kindly did an article on me for the local paper. And it was completely bonkers, completely and utterly bonkers, because I feel like it's totally unwarranted, because I did nothing for 13 hours. No. I mean, it's something that's quite easy to do. I mean, I'm just the one who's sort of unemployed enough to do it, I suppose. But really, it hasn't quite sunk in, because it didn't stop at last night. I was on the phone again at 7:30 this morning on Radio Barks, talking to Andrew Peach, half asleep, actually. I still don't know what I said. If I listened to it back, I probably said something really scandalous. But yeah, it was completely nutty.
The thing is, I mean, you're slightly modest, because I'll say, from a completely personal point of view, Bushwatch has always been... For the last 3 years that you've done it, it's been a really fun part of Deadline
Thank
Day.
Thank you very much.
It's just something a little bit unique and different. And, you know, from a Tyler Stand editorial point of view, it's great, because we get to follow your adventures as well. Not your first appearance on this show as well.
No. It's a couple of years ago now, isn't it?
One of the Christmas specials.
We were down at the Spread Eagle in Tyler, weren't we? That seems like many moons ago now. Yeah. I was fresher faced, yeah.
But you've gone away, you've honed your craft, and now you're back to superstar.
There we go. We've had our highs and lows. But it really was a bit of a happy accident yesterday, though, because it's very niche, because you did get the feeling from who you were talking to, depending on who you spoke to on the radio. Some people got it.
Yeah.
Like the Radio 1 lot, even though they thought it was bonkers, they did sort of appreciate the fact that it is a bit of fun. You know, I don't do it completely seriously. You know, it is always being about the participation and the fun and sort of giving people something to look forward to, no matter how small, even if that thing to look forward to is my face on a periscope.
Well, a couple of years ago, it was great when you had, was it Ola John?
Yes,
did you get a vigil as well?
Yeah, that was the peak. That was until yesterday, and that was the definite peak, because we rocked up to the stadium at about 10, just as Ola John was getting into a car to drive away. So I thought I'd do it via the conventional route and walk up to him and say, Ola, can I have a photo? And his agent goes, no, later. So I go, oh, sod it, I'm having a photo anyway.
I bet Ola John walked into the hotel really slowly. And probably had to stop halfway through for a bit of a break.
It's funny you say that, because a chap walked into the hotel whilst I was having a bit of a breather, and I thought, hang on a minute. Initially, we thought it was Takelo Ranti from Bournemouth.
Yeah.
So we took a photo of him, and I put it to the internet and said, do we know who this is, folks? And everyone's saying, Jacob, I think you have literally taken a photo of a random person, an unsuspecting member of the public. Later on, it turns out it was Ola John's brother, Collins John. Yeah. Ex Fulham and Forest,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So that was a lucky escape. Yeah.
So you say it was the peak. Yesterday. The question is, are you going to keep doing it? Are we going to see you for Deadline Day 2017?
I think I've.
January 2017.
Well, yeah. I mean, I might be sitting here in 30 years' time, thinking, God, like, why am I still here? But It's a double-edged sword, because now it's started, now it's got a bit of momentum behind it. It's got to keep going for tradition, and it might mean that, you know, even if it's not me, someone will take on the Bushwatch mantle. And
disciples of Bushwatch,
indeed, like the weirdest cult imaginable, the cult of the Bush. No, but in an ideal world, I would love to sort of pass it on with a lot of people involved, a lot of people sort of willing and eager to sort of do what I do, because back when it started, it was a one man job, and it's impossible because not only have you got stuff happening at the Medeski, but then all the paperwork happens at Hogwarts, and you've just sort of got to play it by chance if they come back or not. But in an ideal world, we'd have lots and lots of people all hanging out around the stadium with their phones.
It's all a great bit of fun. But a couple of people did say, in all seriousness though, do you think there is maybe a slight negative side to it? The club are a bit reluctant to do stuff because you're.
I mean, the
you're in a bush.
The thing is, as well, with what I do for the Supporters Trust, I promised when I went on the Supporters Trust board to rein it in, and it,
and then you can appear on Radio 1.
Yeah, well, there we go. But everyone. I mean, yesterday at the club, the Carabao sponsors ran some Carabao down to me. Shout out to Carabao. The people in the hotel have always been very nice.
That's
to me.
That's £10, please, Carabao.
Yeah. the Tahoe Stone podcast, sponsored by Carabao. No, dude. Should rename it the Carabao podcast. Or...
Wait, well, they need to stump up some cash first. Carry on. We don't need stuff for free.
The chap who manages the hotel has always been very accommodating. And, you know, I've said I don't want to cause any trouble. And they say, no, carry on. But the club themselves, I think, are quite eager to sort of... keep me at arm's length, as it were.
I was going to say, did you see Yap at all yesterday?
I did not run into Yap, no.
It's probably a good thing.
I ran into Sir John a couple of times, but that's because he's got his penthouse in there.
Just and, getting a pint of milk.
It's funny, I think he did a couple of laps around the car park in a very expensive looking car.
Just because.
But
keeping it ticking over.
Anyway, so there you go. But it's... you do... I think the big shame is now Nick Hammond's left, because I sort of I got to know Nick's modus operandi, as it were, and that he would have his same seat in the hotel every deadline day, where he'd have a chat to people, and you know there would always be something going on there. According to Charles, Brian Tavraden operates more from Hogwarts, and then they come back here for the photos, the picture with the shirt, and whatever here. But it was noticeably quieter yesterday. So whether that's a sign that, you know, we might have to take an alternative Bushwatch tack in the future or what, we don't know. But like I said, I'm keen to reiterate, it's all about the fun, really.
Absolutely.
It's all about, you know, giving people something to sort of engage with, and yeah, let's see where we can take it.
Yeah. Our very own Jim White. Well, before I let you go, a couple of quick questions before we go. As mentioned, as you say, you're on the Star board at the moment.
That's right.
Tonight,
yeah,
as we record this show, is the AJ. Are you standing again?
I am. I think it's a 3-year term you serve.
Okay.
Until you can either sort of surrender the bunk or reapply.
So what is your role within Star at the moment?
I am heavily involved with the communications side of things. So a bit like what you chaps do with the Tarhurst End. I write a couple of articles for Star. I chip in with the programme notes where I can. I'm starting to get slightly more involved with social media. And then until Nathan Wakefield left the board this year, I was going to be helping him set up a young person's branch at Star. And now he's left, I think I might sort of head that up in the long term. So those are the sort of ways I'm involved with Star at the moment, but we're always looking for fresh meat, as it were. And on the board, I am the youngest person, and what it'd be really, really lovely to have is if we have people around my age, you know, in the sort of 20s, early 30s, teens sort of bracket, to really get involved with Star and muscle in, and you know, make their voices heard. So that's my little piece.
Yeah. Excellent. And football matters. Yes. What have you made of the start for Yaps down the first 5-7 games, if you want to include the cup?
I think it's been a real breath of fresh air. I think if you look back at the end of last season, there was a real malaise and, you know, a slightly toxic atmosphere starting to form, in that the fans, you know, maybe weren't all pulling in the same direction. Performances on the pitch were dire. You know, all the management was up in the air. We had owners that hadn't really explicitly made clear their directions for the club. Fast forward 6 months, and I think a lot of those concerns have been put to rest, really. I think by bringing in Stam and with the ties allowing him to form his own squad now, all of a sudden it's a clean slate. And the way we're playing, I think, is getting people excited. And yeah, there's a real feel-good factor back, you know, but mixed in with that slight air of cautiousness as well. But, you know, I think for the season, most people are quite grounded and we're not going to pull up trees this season, but a solid year of steady building, I think, is what most people are hoping for. And I'm all for that too. Long live the Amsterdam era, and let's see where we are in a year's time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for taking the time out of your superstar to appear on the show. You know, it was delicate negotiations with your entourage.
So I'm more than happy to help, guys. I mean, I'll never forget my roots, and you know, I'm back to 9 till 5 now.
So, yeah, you can expect that check in the post. Thanks for that plug.
Thank you,
Jacob. Thank you very much.
Best of luck with Star,
and we'll see you again in January.
Hopefully, with some signings on that
yes, deadline day.
Yeah, it would have been lovely to follow up yesterday with a glut of signings, but you know, you can't have your cake and eat it.
Indeed. All right. Well, thank you very much, Jacob.
Thank you, everyone.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
So a big thanks to Jacob, who's now gone running off to take part in the Star AGM. Before that took place and before we recorded the rest of this podcast, we got a chance to speak to another couple of Star board members to sort of explain the whole base of what Star is and what they do. So we can listen to that now. As mentioned, it is the Supporters Trust at Reading's AGM, and I'm delighted to be joined by two members of the Star Board, Paula Martin and Roger Titford. Roger, Paula, welcome onto the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Always nice to get some new debutants, but we're racking up the appearances and the squad members now.
Does that mean we're part of the Eamon Dolan Academy now?
You are, yeah. You've come through the TTE Podcast Academy, and for life now, you will be brandished as such. But thanks very much for taking the time to join us. I know it's a busy night for you guys, one of the biggest nights of the year, especially when it's a new manager as well, and for such a... Probably
it's always a new manager here, Dan.
The last few years, anyway.
I only remember Brian McDermott being on the other month. So it's Yap. How have you had the chance to speak to him before tonight?
No.
We haven't even bought his autobiography and read it yet, which we should have done. Very remiss. Couldn't find it on eBay.
Well, hopefully no one throws in any questions he doesn't like. So he doesn't look like the type of man that will take much nonsense.
No, I think he could be quite scary if he wants to be.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed. If you're hearing this, it means that we've all survived to tell the tale. Yeah. So, but let's bring this all back. This is a night organised by Star, the Supporters Trust at Reading.
Yep.
A lot of people out there would have heard of Star, but I can imagine there are a few people listening to this show that don't quite know what Star do or what Star are for. So for those uneducated out there, sort of explain what Star is.
Star is there to represent the voices of all the supporters, whether they're Star members or not, and to safeguard the interests of supporters of Reading Football Club in the short, medium and long term. That's one way of putting it. But we do also lots of other things. We organise the away travel, we organise the fans forum, we provide a range of benefits for our members, we meet with the club at senior level very frequently, we talk to the council about Royal Elm Park, we are active members of the umbrella organisation of Supporters Trust, Supporters Direct. What else do we do, Paula?
Amongst our objectives is actually promoting football in the community, in the locality. So we also, at the moment, we sponsor the Reading Deaf Team, who've just had a very successful season, just about to start again next Saturday. So once you've been to see John at Waterstones, pop along to the Piggott School to watch the Deaf Team play. Well, basically football everywhere. So we're also trying now to promote the RFC Women's Team, because that's now they're in WSL1. They need a little bit of a few more people coming along, because they're still only getting a few hundred people. And it's actually, dare I say, good old-fashioned football, so that everybody mixes. It's no segregation. There's a good chance to stand with the drummer and sing if you want to, or just sit in the stands in amongst the other supporters. And in fact, they're playing tonight. They're playing Liverpool tonight, so... Let's hope they get their first win of the season.
And we also represent supporters who get into bother with football authorities from time to time. We have a kind of representation service, which I think some people connected with the Tylehurst End have been beneficiaries of.
We won't name any names, so to preserve our legal status.
We're also hoping that, well, we're intending soon to get representatives in the stands so that we have notice boards in each of the stands, and we're hoping that soon we'll get people that are there so that if anybody wants to communicate with the club or with Star or with anybody else, they come to that particular person who can then point them in the right direction or liaise for them, so that it gives people a chance to just feel that there's somebody they can go to during the match if they want to.
So we've been going since 2002, and we're one of the 20 largest supporters trusts in England, I think, in terms of membership. So, you know, we feel that we're doing well compared with what supporters at other championship clubs get.
So what's the difference between Star and the old supporters club? Because, I mean, a lot of my dad's sort of era will remember famously, you know, going along for the supporters club and doing and arranging travel and things like that, which, of course, you guys still do. But what's the difference between a supporters trust and the supporters club?
Well, legality, basically.
The supporters club is completely illegal, of course.
He
says a former chairman of it.
But a club is an association. And, for instance, we did, the RFSC did have audited accounts and so on. So it was very kosher. But as a trust, we have to.
Yeah.
So we have to submit our accounts to the FCA, I think it is. And there are certain rules and regulations that we just have to comply with, so that we are a little bit more, shall we say...
We're a lot more responsible and a lot more held to account.
Yes.
We're part of the cooperative movement. We have a constitution or set of policies or rules or whatever it is, I'm never quite sure, which runs to literally hundreds of pages.
Yes.
Whereas the old supporters club had a constitution that fitted comfortably onto two sides of a piece of A4. You know, that's part of the modern world. There are so many more rules and regulations around. But being a supporters trust allows us to take on a lot more responsibility and be viewed as a more responsible organisation, more worth talking to than was the case with the supporters.
And that's one of the key things, because Star has a seat on management meetings. You have regular dialogue with the football club, and that's been one of the strengths, is that you're able to get messages across to the football club.
Yeah.
But by that token, I mean, some fans you do see on social media saying, oh, why aren't Star... you know, being more active, especially when we had all the recent ownership problems, a lot of people saying, well, why aren't Star standing up for us and things like that? Sort of explain how difficult that can be.
We look on ourselves as a critical friend, so that we want to be friends with them so that they will talk to us and listen to us, but we'll be critical to their faces and won't just rush to the press to be critical, because we feel that if you do that, you're likely to end up either at loggerheads or not being listened to at all. And it's quite important that we keep the dialogue with the club going, so that even there have been times when relationships have been a little bit rocky for various reasons, but we are still there. So we've managed to live through those problems, haven't we?
Yeah. I mean, like any middleman, like any diplomat, we get it in the neck from both sides, and you know, that's that in a sense is part of the job description. The other point I'd make about the ownership issue and so on, we are continuously in contact and raising the big issues with the club, but there are times where we can't say anything. You know, we're told things in strict confidence from time to time, which we then can't repeat, other than to say, We're talking to them in, you know, and we're broadly supportive of what's going on. So I would hope that people listening to this who don't know about Star don't think, you know, we take 6 or 8 weeks off away from an important issue and just do absolutely nothing. Rest assured, we are talking to people in the meantime. It's just that we can't give a running commentary on what we do.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, you guys are coming up for 15 years as an entity, as a body. What's next for Star? Where do you hope to sort of go? Are you happy where you are, or are there things that you want to get in the future?
Well, yes, we want to develop. But having said that, Roger says we're one of the larger trusts in the country. An awful lot of the other trusts have started when the club's in trouble and get a lot of interest for a short period of time, and then they find there's just two people running it, and it all winds down to nothing. We have actually been relatively level in terms of membership. Obviously, when we get to the Premier League, we get lots more members because we get a lot of people wanting to come to the Fans Forum and wanting to travel. But our membership does actually stay fairly good at sort of between sort of 1,500-ish most years.
Yeah, I mean, our goal is to be, you know, somewhere between 10 and 20% of the average home support as membership. In good years, it'll get up towards 20%. So our goal would be right now to have more members, to have more board members.
Definitely that.
So anybody who's a member and can find some small degree of support from somewhere is welcome to come and put their case to be on the Star Board. And there are plenty of interesting tasks.
Well, because this is just it as well. I mean, there is, I don't know, it's not my view, but you hear it. It's like, oh, well, you know, Star run by a lot of older people, they're not
Jacob.
Yeah, exactly. Our resident superstar who we'll hopefully be hearing from as well on this show.
We've just been approached by somebody else that's just gone away to university that wants to get involved too, which is brilliant because it does tend to be older people, and that's probably just because when you're in your 20s, 30s, even 40s, you're usually so wrapped up in your own life, in building relationships, having children, building a career, all sorts of things like that, that it does tend to be the older people that have got the time and the willingness to put some time in. But, you know, we'd love to get more people involved.
And that is the message. It is a group that is open to all. You can head over to the website for more information. What is the web address?
www.star-reading.org.
Fantastic. And as mentioned, do come along. There are fans forums and events regularly throughout the season. If you go onto that website, you'll find details of them. Paul and Roger, thank you very much indeed for joining.
I know
you've got a busy night ahead, so I won't keep you any longer, but thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
And a big thank you to Paula and Rog for taking time to join us. As mentioned, they are, as we speak, they are taking part in the Star AGM. So a big thank you to them for taking time out of their evening to join us on the show. And we've got one other interview to hit in pub chat. It's a triple bill, serving you the best for this episode 100. You might remember we've had John Keane on before. He is the author of Some of the Parts. And we caught up with him again a little earlier on to find out the progression of how the book's doing and where you can pick it up. John Keane, writer of Some of the Parts. John, thanks for joining us again. First question, how's it all going?
Ticking over. It's been a quiet summer, but things are picking up recently. In this month, when Saturday comes, there was a very nice review which said that the fact that I hadn't spoken to players was indicative of the whole ethos of the club. And I still don't quite know what to make of that. But it was a nice review, and that there's been some sales on the back of that. Really, September things are picking up. I've actually been invited down to the Waterstones Heritage Day next week to do a book signing. So if anybody wants to come along and meet me and get a copy of the Some of the Parts signed, I'll be in Waterstones Broad Street between 11 and 12 on the 10th of September. That's Saturday of next week.
Presumably they can also pick up the book on the day as well.
Absolutely, yes. And in fact, Waterstones have got a stock anyway, but it won't be signed and you won't get to meet me. And most people would probably say that's a bonus, but there we are.
Not at all. I mean, you said it, you've had decent feedback. I mean, we've had numerous reviews. Last time we spoke to you, it was the early part of the summer, I think, right towards the end of last season. We had you on the show when we were in one of the previous recording studios. Not quite as glamorous surroundings as we're in today. No disrespect to my current parents-in-law's old abode. But, I mean, how's it been on the sort of the sales front, on things like that? Have you had any challenges you haven't expected? I know you were talking about difficulties getting it in online and certain things like that.
Yes, I mean, I've learned so much about book publishing from this, probably more than I ever wanted to learn. And yes, I, it's been going fairly well amongst Reading supporters. And I think I've spammed the hell out of most of them. So I think just about every Reading supporter knows about the sum of the parts now. What I'm really trying to do is make the breakthrough to supporters of other teams and people who like football writing rather than specifically like Reading, because obviously that's a much bigger market. And I think Reading's achievements are so good. They should be of interest to everybody. It was a historic time and a real achievement. And there's lots of parallels with Leicester City.
Yeah.
You know, the team without stars, teamwork, slightly unorthodox training methods and so on. And actually them overachieving like we did. So it's something that I'm trying to leverage that.
Not expecting you to name any names, but have you had any feedback from anybody sort of connected to that era? Has anyone sort of spoken to you about it?
Surprisingly, no. Okay. Which I think is good, because I'm sure if they didn't like it, they would have said. So I'm taking no news as good news. Exactly, yes.
Exactly. And is this sort of, again, we talked to you last time, you sort of said you had a few sort of maybe ideas in the early works. A couple of months down the line, a summer behind you, anything else sort of creeping into the brain about what you might do next?
Yeah, I mean, really, there's two things I'm thinking of. Firstly, I've got a book idea that is just starting to germinate. It's obviously Reading related, but I'll keep you in suspense on that one. It's too early to say.
You tease.
The other thing is the fact that I now know all about self-publishing football books, and effectively I've got my own publishing company. So one of the things that I'm looking to do is work with other people, you know, not just Reading fans, but other supporters of other clubs who want to write football books and self-publish. So really help nurse them through the process. I'll provide ISBN numbers and so on, and really share what I've learned to help other people self-publish.
Fantastic. Well, just in case people can't get along to the signing at Waterstones, where can they pick up the book?
Okay, in fact, Waterstones globally will be stocking it from next week.
But, fantastic.
But to be honest, if I can be selfish, the way that I make the most money, because what I've also learned is the economics of book publishing is horrible. The publishers take such a cut. So that if people want to buy it in the way that makes me the most money, it's direct from me on my website, which is micklepress.com. That's micklepress.com.
Fantastic. We'll include a link to that on the post that goes up with this show. But again, thank you very much, John. I said, just remind people, when are you going to be at Waterstones?
It's next Saturday, which is September the 10th. There's no match because we play on the Friday.
Excellent.
No excuses. It's 11 till 12 in the morning.
Fantastic. Well, great to have you on again. We'll get lots of your thoughts on the Reading team, I suppose, over the coming year. But great to have you on the show in a bit more detail. But very, very briefly, what have you made of this start to this season? Because you're up in Scotland now.
So that's right. I was one of those who got credited with making such a long journey to Newcastle. And of course, for me, it's not such a long journey to Newcastle.
Hey, take the glory.
I was quite impressed. I was saying to Handbags earlier that, I mean, with Brendan Rodgers, all the messing about at the back just seemed to be for the sake of it. But I can actually see the passing at the back with this team is all about getting forward and making space. So I can actually see some aim to it. And it looks fairly solid. I can see a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, but I a personal note, God, I wish the youngsters weren't going out on loan. I want to see youngsters rather than unknown foreigners playing for this team.
Yeah, well, we've touched on the Checker Trade Trophy earlier, so we'll leave that there. But as I said, John, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Fingers crossed, and I hope that the sales continue to go well and you do break through and the book gets the recognition it deserves. As I said, completely just my own opinion, but from what I've read and others as well, it's a fantastic book that I very much encourage any Reading fan to read. It brings back some sensational memories of that era. So please go and check that out. As I said, we will include all of the links in the show.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Again, as I said at the top of the show, a massive thank you to everyone who's ever sent us in tweets, emails, Facebook messages, whatever. By now, you hopefully know the addresses. But if you don't, it's at the Tarlhurst End on Twitter. The Tarlhurst End at facebook.com is the website. Well, facebook.com/ the Tarlhurst End. See, we go 100 episodes in. I can't remember our own address. And it is the Tarlhurst End at gmail.com for your emails. And people have continued to send in their feedback right up to show 100, starting with Ian Phillips. He says, of all the strikers we were linked with, who would you have been happiest to sign? Also, do you think Jonathan Bond has a future at Reading? Jonathan Bond loaned out to Gillingham, where he's gone in as first choice.
So he's played a couple of games already. Mark, start with that Bond point. Do you think he's got any future?
Yeah, totally. He's going to go away, and like Alex McCarthy and Adam Federici before him have gone out on loan and played full seasons in League One, League Two and below. So he's going to go out on loan, hopefully get a full season under his belt. Ali Alhabsi's out of contract at the end of the season. We don't know how much of Yarko Lahr we're going to see in the next 12 months. So by the time he comes back in the summer, it could be him versus Yarko Lahr, and that could be something he could win.
Anyone concerned for Bond's future?
He carries on making mistakes, yes. But, you know, Yapstam hasn't really seen much of him. But some of the mistakes that he made last season were fairly fundamental and basic, and they cost us points.
Yeah. And I think, just on the strikers point, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn again. I think Graben, I think if you'd had a choice of any of those links, anybody gone to...
Possibly Washington as well. But
we went after Washington before, didn't we?
Yeah, and they
picked Rackles instead.
And they picked Rackles because it was a slightly more... let's say it was an economical decision, I think.
He scored more goals.
He did. He did. I don't think... Has Washington got his first QPR Championship goal yet?
He scored in the League Cup, but he's not scored in the Championship.
There you go.
He's not going to score for Ireland, didn't he?
But Graben would have been perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. But that's such a tenuous link, I think. I can't see. He
was that agent or paper talk?
Well, it appeared in the Sun. So I don't know where it came from. But he only just moved back there, didn't he?
He was linked with a £6 million move to Derby on about 2 days earlier. Mm. And Reading were never going to be able
to. Who ended up going for Matty Vidra.
Yep.
It was an interesting point as well that me and you were talking about online, Ollie, that of Reading's six loanees last season, five of them gone back out on loan.
And the other one has gone to Derby.
He's gone to Vidra. So it doesn't say a lot for the prospects of those players when they're going out again. Michael Hector, part of the amusing stat, he's been sent off twice in two games for Frankfurt. So good job, Michael. Way to make a first impression in Germany. And everybody else has continued to be going out. Ola John's gone to Wolves. We've got...
Piazon's at Fulham.
Piazon's gone to Fulham.
Fernandez at...
Elke. And the left back, Andrew Taylor's at Bolton. So I think that's everybody covered. Moving on. Tim asks, he states, it's important to keep everything in perspective. As long as we get better each week, it will be a good season. I think we'll agree.
Yep.
Anyone? No? Good. Right, moving on. Alex, thoughts on Jake Cooper, Gunter, thoughts on Cooper, Gunter and Jan and why they are scapegoated?
Cooper, because he makes basic errors. Gunter, because for all his fitness qualities, his physical attributes, and his bombing up and down the wing, doesn't defend particularly well for me and many others.
And he can't cross either. Well, particularly well.
Apart from the Euros.
That's the thing.
Apart from for Wales.
Does Gunter suffer from Howe Robson-Kanu light syndrome in the fact that anyone who does well for a team that isn't Reading and then does, part of a pretty middling Reading team.
No, because I think Gunter actually performs pretty much to the best of his ability, whereas Hal Robson-Kanu blatantly doesn't, or didn't.
Yeah, as I say,
we don't see a Murty in Gunter, do we, charging down that line? And that's something that we really want to have fullbacks.
He's very athletic, Gunter. He is really fit and he could run, but we just don't see the mentality.
He's Mr. Steady, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's steady enough for the Championship. But if he goes to the Premier League, I think if he plays 38 games eventually, halfway through the season,
dropped.
He'll be found out.
McDermott dropped him.
For Sean Cummings.
Well,
and
obviously
and
dropped
Stephen Kelly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sean Cummings is the best
wide back
defensive.
If you think of this deadline, all the paper talk beforehand about the £1 million buyout clause, when it came to it, nobody wanted to pay for that, did they?
If it existed, and I suppose the question is, did Gunter want to move? I mean, if it was only Hull in for him, do you want to move to Hull at the moment?
To be second choice right back, probably, as well. He wouldn't have been first choice in the Premier League team.
Yeah, and Charles was saying on the podcast extra last week, again, do you want to uproot your family and everything like that for a possible one-season stint? He's probably on decent money here. He's settled. So, as for Jan Kermigan, why he's scapegoated, I think it's a little bit of what you touched on with Cooper, though. He's not scored a lot of goals.
No.
He's got four in his time here.
He has, yeah. For me, I think... He's the sort of player, he's having a touch of the Matej Vidras in some way, and that his quality is, for me, clearly there. It's just that touch, the final touch, getting it into the back of the net. Vidra fairly consistently got himself into goal-scoring positions, and for whatever reason, it rarely hit it. And I think Kermigan has been unlucky in some ways, but he's finally got a decent strike against Cardiff. And hopefully, you can go on a little bit of a run.
Yeah, Becca, Harry is clearly not a Kermigan fan. Well, he might be. He said, after deadline day saw no striker come in, is it worth starting with Samuel over Kermigan from here on in?
The thing with Kermigan, I think he offers more to the team than just like the striking role. I think certainly against when I was at Newcastle, like he certainly gets back, like for that he... I just don't think he's a striker that you should play up front on his own. I think he's not at his strongest there. I think he can hold the ball up well and then you can see what he's trying to do and then there's no one there. So I'm not sure at the moment that Samuel should be starting over Kermigan. I think maybe just see how things... Now he's got the goal against Cardiff, see how that goes. And
yeah. I think you're pretty much bang on the money there because he does offer a hell of a lot more than just a striker's role. Because you see, he's one of the people that gets back. And I think he's one of the ones that Zonal marks. I think he does the near post.
Yeah.
He's also, it's not just, let's say, not just the striking role. He does what the Hal Robson-Kanu role does for Wales, in that he's not just there to score goals. He's there to hold the ball up and bring others into play. And with a bit closer support, you can see that's what he's trying. That's what the idea was in the first couple of months after he signed under McDermott. But Ola John and it would have been, I think it was Gareth McCleary on the other. They were too distant from each other. Pearson as well. They were just too distant.
Do you think he would work in tandem with Samuel? One playing off the other?
Potentially. I think there's certainly scope for that. I don't think we're going to see it. But
using Samuel's pace to get around the back after he's held the ball up, I think could work.
Absolutely. And he'd certainly have someone who would be ideally suited to playing a lot closer. Whereas if you've got two wide players, who they are effectively wide players, in forward attacking positions, you're going to have a problem occasionally, sometimes, where they are, as I say, just too disparate from each other.
He's still on his own up front.
Yeah. Effectively, we're playing 4-5-1.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens if they go a few games without scoring. And Samuel's got a great opportunity with Dennis Rack was injured with Yaku Mate, struggling for fitness as well. He's never going to have a better time to sort of really stake a claim. So it'll be interesting to see how he does. And if Kermigan does struggle, then it's up to him to make most of his opportunities. Right, we had a message from Andrew who asked us about, you know, what are the prospects of Williams, Gunter and McCleary still being here after the window, and who would have thought that, which we touched on a bit earlier. A long email from Steve. He wrote in to us a couple of days ago. He says, being in the US, Saturday's match was the first I was able to watch, was the first game I was able to watch this season. Thanks, Bein Sports. I've heard a lot of the talk about the setup, but it was clear to me that we need to be patient with the team, as it was evident there was space to take advantage and the players just aren't seeing it yet. So rather than that, my two big takeaways from the game were, on the offensive side, I thought Stephen Quinn was the difference in the game after he came on. His willingness to go forward stood out in great contrast to Evans' time on the pitch. And having that willingness from both of those midfield positions opened up a lot more play. Do you think Stam set up the team that way on purpose to be more defensive, or is Evans just an ill fit for that position, or both? And on the defensive side of the ball, I'm concerned about how vulnerable we seemed on crosses and set pieces. Is how easily Cardiff seemed to win headers around our goal a one-off fluke or reason to worry? Johnny, I'm going to pivot to you on this because you've looked quite a bit and have been saying throughout the season on this show, set pieces, again against Cardiff. We didn't really mention it in the recap, but their best chances all come in the air.
Well, if you look at just about every team that we've played, they've had at least one very good chance from a set piece. Certainly many goals we've conceded have been from set pieces. And if you include penalty we conceded up at Newcastle as well, that was, again, from a set piece, from a corner, I think it was, out on the wing. It is a concern. And I'm sure that hopefully they'll be trying to sort that out on the training grounds. In terms of the other point about the midfield, I think especially when you're heading away, away from home, you do tend to set up a bit more conservatively. And when you've got Evans in there, who's perhaps more comfortable on the ball, passing it around, doesn't offer you that dynamism, but offers you that safety net, then I think it's fair for Yap Stam to sort of look at the game for 60 minutes and say, OK, now we've frustrated them enough, now we can look to counter, or now we can look to control it a little bit more, go on and win the game. You don't just want to put all your attacking players on straight from the start, especially so early in a match. So I think what Yap Stam now has got is a lot of different options. He's got almost two players for every position, just about. And that's another reason I'm not particularly concerned about the striker, because he said we're only playing one striker, so you don't really need four, because then you've got even more problems up front. But I think there's enough variation in the squad now that Stam can say, okay, I need a more dynamic midfielder today, I'll put in Stephen Quinn, or I need someone who's more comfortable on the ball and could just keep things tucking over, I'll put in George Evans, or I need an absolute nutter who's going to break someone's leg, I'll put in Joe Van
Wow. Bold. Sorry, that's a bold mission statement before the game. Mm. And I think a slightly illegal one. So I'm not quite sure Yap will admit to that when we... although you can ask him, because we'll be speaking to him in a few minutes' time in the fans' forum. So I dare
how
you to put that...
How much commission is he on per injury?
I dare you to put that question to him.
Red card bonus.
You know, and if you do ask that question, may I suggest it'll probably be the last appearance you're allowed to make on this podcast.
Probably get a death stare.
Jack writes in his thoughts after the Cardiff game. This is before the deadline. So he says, I thought Reading were very impressive against Cardiff. Huge contrast to Wolves 2 weeks previously. Looks like Stam has really learned from that defeat, so fair play to him. The main difference was the introduction of Moore and Blackett. They provided the defensive stability to allow us to attack. Moore was excellent and Blackett was also good defensively, but didn't offer a huge deal going forward. Maybe that was why Obisa was brought on. Fantastic win, and maybe with another striker, a top half finish should be very realistic. Obviously, again, written before the end of the window. Moving on as well, and I liked this question. It came in from Lord Treby, one of our biggest supporters here on the show. He regularly contributes to the crowdfunding campaign. So thank you very much to him for that, and a good friend of the show. He says, last year, many times people said we lacked flair and exciting players and true leaders. I know it's early days, but do any of the players fit the bill for that so far? I see Swift as a possible star, and Joe Vandenberg, Williams and McShane as leaders. Dave, do you think we've got that bit of flair back in the team?
I think I touched on it earlier in Gareth McCleary being a lot more confident, seemingly a lot fitter. I don't think we lacked flair players last season. I just don't think they played particularly well.
I think it was more sort of the context of people that got you on your feet. As in, like, the Kebe sort of old, or Jilks, or something like that.
Well, Michael Jilks was playing, we were on our feet anyway, because it was terracing like three quarters of the way around.
Hey.
The
Shout out to you, Norfolk stands. Seaters, should I say.
I struggle with that a little bit. Because, as I say, I don't think... Ola John, at times last season, certainly when in his cameos earlier in the season, and midway through the season, was capable of, and certainly more than capable of getting people on their feet. When he got the ball in the final third, you just knew he was going to try and take his fullback on, and at least be an attempted end product. I think Matteo Vidra at times looked exceptional quality. Nick Blackman in the early part of the season, you knew he was going to score. He was enough to get on your feet when he got 20, 25 yards from goal in a central position. So I don't think we lack flair players. Yes, we lack leaders. Absolutely, we lack leaders. I mean, for Christ's sake, we finished, where was it, 18th?
17th.
So, yeah, we lack leaders because the amount of times that we just failed to respond to any setback was...
But do you think there's more leadership this season? I mean, he's mentioned two of the players that Jason's mentioned are players that were here last season.
That's just it. There's more backbone to the side. Certainly more backbone. We've got Paul McShane, who's a leader. We've now got Liam Moore, who looks a leader. Joey Vandenberg looks a leader. Danny Williams, for all his critics, is a player that drives others on. He's a leader.
I think there's more leadership above the pitch as well. Now we seem to have a direction off the pitch, or certainly a structure off the pitch. And
that was my next point. Off the pitch, on the touchline, Yap Stam.
I was talking even higher at board level. It now seems like we have a route, if you like.
Well, absolutely. Tiger's basically taken control. Yeah. He's openly admitted that himself. So that's another fair point that I hadn't considered.
Maybe he's watching us right now.
Possibly.
Or listening in.
Again, the ulterior motives of having us in this. As is a very now dark Medeci Stadium from when we started. Dad, I'll finish with you. See a bit more leadership, a bit more flair in the team.
I think overall we've got a good squad. I think that there's so many more players that can come in and make a difference. Last year we were struggling at times when we had injuries. But this season, if you look at the whole of the midfield, we've got something like 8 or 9 different options to play in that midfield. And I think at the back we're looking stronger. It'd be very interesting to see how we do when people run at us again.
Yeah.
But I think we're in such a good spot. When you think about it, next Friday, we've got Ipswich. After the Ipswich game last year, we were all thinking, wow, This is it.
Some of us put money on us to win the league.
Not bank accounts, thinking, ow.
Hashtag gamble away.
It'd be interesting to see Saturday morning next week what we all think 1 year on.
I'm going to resist going to the bookies, whatever happens. And I think on that gamble away note, one final bit of feedback as well from a show we did a couple of weeks ago. We were asked about favourite Reading goals. And thank you to Dave as well proving my assumption correct that Jimmy Kebbe's massive run against Leicester didn't lead to a goal. He set up a goal for...
It was Noel Hunt.
Yes. I did remember.
The pass was actually... It was the run down the wing. The pass was for Shane Long. It was just under hit, but Longy managed to get a nip to it. And it just fell to Noel Hunt on the 18-yard line and smacked it past Kasper Schmeichel, no less.
This is why we have this guy on the show. And and James Richards, who writes for us, you might have seen some of his articles looking at wider issues around football, things like parachute payments. Spoiler alert, he is an Oxford fan. But he said his favourite Reading goal was James Lambert's against Forest. And he goes on to say, this was always my favourite. And he later had a stint at Oxford, but we were too broke to sign him permanently at the time. That was a great goal.
Played here for Oxford, live on Sky.
Yeah,
November 1999. It was 11:30 kickoff, and we lost 2-1.
Mm.
Hideous day. Early Pardew days.
That was a very good goal, though, against Forest in that 3-3 draw.
It was. Yeah. People eulogise about Ryan Giggs' goal against Arsenal in the FA Cup semi-final. And yeah, it was 115 minutes, and everybody was tired. And Jamie Lambert's goal was better. Much tighter space and the quickness of feet. And he was only like 12 yards from goal when he took the three Forest players on and tucked it under.
Is it Besant?
No, Besant had been sent off at that point. I think it might have been Steve Chettle.
Yeah. A game also renowned for a very, very famous miss from Steve Stone. Yes. Go look that one up if you haven't seen it. So thank you very much to feedback again. Not just for tonight, but for the 100 shows that have come before it. Again, it's what keeps us going. Because if people stop sending us messages and stuff, then we wouldn't do it. So there you go. If you want to find a way to take us out, you have it. But no, it's genuinely appreciated. I said at the start of the very first show, it's by the fans, for the fans. That will never change. And whatever your topics, it doesn't have to be based on stuff this week. We love it when you chuck in a historical topic. That we can use for a pub chat or something like that. Even if it's just at the start of the week, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com and we'll get it in there for you.
I know we're short on time, but can we just quickly go around the table for those who weren't at that podcast, like myself?
Okay,
Dave. Our own favourite goals.
All right, okay. Let's start with you then, Dave. Come
Stuart,
on.
Stuart Lovell, 96th minute against Wolves in April 1997.
Okay, love it. Becca, have you got a favourite goal that stands out?
James Harper's against Liverpool. To make it 3-1 December 2007.
Yeah.
Bounce watch.
Yeah, Johnny, you were on the episode. They all blur into one now.
I was, but I don't think I gave one. Gorks to make it 2-1 against West Ham.
His was the equaliser, wasn't it?
Gorks was the equaliser. Yeah, Noel Hunt.
Yes, that's true. Noel Hunt from Jason.
That Martin is bounce watch. That was.
That was another level of cheering.
Mark.
On the same note, I'm going to have to say Lafonda's Southampton goal that put us 2-1 up. We're about 10 minutes to go, and that basically won us the league.
You don't know how many times I've watched those highlights over on YouTube.
Dad?
Well, as Wim Senior, there's only one goal, Robin Friday against Tranmere.
Yeah, you're one of the 73,000 attendants here.
I was there.
And at the other end of the age spectrum, Ollie?
The day ended in despair, but I'd probably go for Gareth McClure against Burnley. Purely because of the pure skill that it took. Listening back to the commentary of it, the commentary was brilliant.
Yeah, and I gave, I think it was moments of skill was the actual question on the for that podcast. So I think I said Kebe's, but yeah, I'll go for that. But any one of those goals that's been mentioned on this table is fine. I'll take any one of those any day. Also, you know, Ledgerwood. Getting us up with that goal.
Moments of skill. All right, let's go. Moments of skill.
No, because you meant.
I think if I remember rightly, someone mentioned a Glenn Little piece of skill, and mine is very from exactly the same player. Was when he threw the dummy on three Wolves players and just sent them all in the same direction before lofting the cross. And actually, I spoke to him about this about a few years later, and he said he lofted the cross for Kevin Doyle in the middle, and Kitson just ran in, bombed in from 18 yards and belted the header in from 6 yards at Wolves.
Okay.
Lovely, lovely piece of skill.
Well, we've got another, hopefully another 100 episodes in the locker to go through some more magic moments, so keep those in hand.
That could be a feature, Handbags Magic Moment.
Handbags Magic Moment. Well, we used to have Westy's champagne moment, yeah. But with Westy not here, semi-retired now, that's, so maybe I'll put it to the management committee. Okay. See whether we can get it on in future weeks.
Am I a part of that?
Yeah, you can be if you want to.
All right.
There's a fee.
I'll turn it down.
There's a fee. That just about wraps the show. There's going to be no any other business this week. We're not going to look ahead to the Ipswich games. It's a week from now and lots can happen. If you are vaguely interested in the Prediction League standings, I am still top on 5 points. Mr. Charles Watts correctly guessed the 1-0 win at Cardiff, so he moves up to 4 points. Handbags, you're third on 3. And Johnny, last year's champion, propping up the table at the moment with Westy on 2. Plenty of time to turn that around.
Just giving you a bit of hope.
I predicted a 2-1 win, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah.
Yep. So that nudged your head.
I got a point.
You did indeed. Right. As I said, that is number 100 in the books. Thank you very much to everyone, to all of the guests here around the table for joining me. Thank you to our interviewees earlier. And again, the biggest thank you of all to everyone out who has listened to us, sent us in feedback. It's all appreciated. It's the reason we keep doing this show. And it's the reason we will continue to do this show until you get thoroughly sick of us. So,
never.
Well, someone needs to get sick of me because I'm not sure if I've got 100 more, but I'll do my very best. I will be back with Charles in a couple of weeks' time. Now, this show, by the way, the one after the Ipswich game might be a little bit delayed as I am off on holiday, so I might leave it to my able deputies and the management committee that people have just signed up for.
But special joke of a management committee.
Indeed. Stay tuned to the Twitter for examples of that, and I'll leave you, as always, with our theme by Violet Klaas and a few memories from this podcast in past. Until then, go on, you arse.
You arse.
One, my name's Dan Wimbush, otherwise known as Wimb. Welcome to the first of what we're hoping will be a weekly podcast devoted to all things Reading Football Club.
Trenner has got all the ability to be a top footballer, else he wouldn't have been at Real Madrid in the first place. I've said this from the beginning. It's not that I think he's a bad footballer, I just think he's an unprofessional joke.
Could you imagine that?
I think it surprised him.
If Ho Backpan suddenly turns the best holding sort of midfielder in the country.
It would be a real surprise, yeah.
Is that how Robson Canoe? Where's Ho Backpan? We could have had the next Makalele.
We need the yak.
Bring me back.
All the shows I do, I say the same thing about Reading all the time. They give you that little bit of hope, and then they yank it from underneath you. And it's still happening now.
It's a bit of a ridiculous comparison, but David Silva.
Johnny Williams, I will not have David Silva and Hal Robson-Kanu mentioned in any comparison.
Least improved player.
Right, it's a Hal Robson-Kanu landslide, unfortunately. Hal.
Try and get your move in January. This club wants it.
Morrison.
Yeah. Well, as Johnny's cough sounds a lot like Shaw Morrison.
Robson-Kanu.
We're a family-friendly show, Mark.
With the mailbag bulging, the fans are certainly still with us.
Like I said, when things are going bad, you get a bulging mail sack.
I'd be careful I said that.
I'm sorry, usually Johnny's the one that sits on the fence. I know you're fairly new to this podcast, Steve, but Johnny's usually the one that sits
on
the fence.
I'd like to take offence at that statement.
So is there any way you can force supporters to chant? That's the question. No, you can't force them to chant.
Don't know, electric cattle prod can do brilliant things.
I've never been more excited.
Swift! Sorry, Mrs. Johnny.
I've been trolled.
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to save.
It's sponsored giraffe. By a giraffe sanctuary.
Flamingo?
We've had flamingo. Flamingos, camels and giraffes. The Tyler Sen podcast brings you it all. My legendary pronunciation skills continue. Lads to Modi Stugu. I can't even pronounce the name. Modi Sugu? It's not a jolly season, as I mentioned, for Nigel Atkins. He has been sacked. The Reading manager has been sacked. Steve Clark, no longer in a job. Reading manager Brian McDermott has been sacked. Hey, look, we had Elroy Cromier as an interview guest the other day. So all the big names here on the Tyler Sen podcast.
Mr. Simon Osborne.
Evening, gents. How are we?
John Halls. How are you?
Former Reading defender Elroy Cromier.
I'm also sort of proud. I had the chance to play for Reading.
Shaka, thanks very much for taking the time to join us.
You're very welcome, Dan. Anytime.
Kevin Doyle.
And just waited for everyone to play and pop out a bush. What I didn't realise was he sat in dog in the bush.
One, Mr. Stuart Lovell.
My basic wage was £90 per week.
Although, ironically, I've got asked for ID today. I've never been so chuffed.
No way.
I'll be trying to chat me up.
Trying to get your address.
My 10-year-old son was still next to me. I thought, come on, you know what I mean? He's 10. Do the maths.
Listen, if I wanted to listen to DJ Mega Party announcing the flipping team, like it's the blinking top 40 in the charts, and I've listened to the top 40 in
I
the
can
charts.
Imagine that in a past life DJ Mega Party was DJing at Mega Bowl in Calcutta on Friday night. Cat stops play.
Surreal.
I'm not sure how she got up here.
Knee-jerk reactions, here we go.
Get the sausage rolls on order, get the bus painted.
Mate, I'm in the West, it's corn sandwiches all the way.
Ow.
The positivity of the positive is so positive.
You've heard it here first, folks. Two out of three of us predicting promotion.
You wait, right, till these three or four flops and be like, shocking, Zionist, why did you do it?
Alex Fernandez, gosh.
Bring, we've only got him on loan.
Bring back Akpan.
Bring back Akpan.
Apologies for this very brief, rough and ready link. But then again, what would you expect from such an unprofessional joke of a podcast?
Don't see many rich gamblers.
You don't in general. But you only have to have one big win. Gamble it away.
Yeah, gamble away. That's about five gamble wares in.